Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs with this week's Midrash of the Week podcast. One type of midrash which one often comes across are those midrashim which link a known biblical personality to another anonymous biblical personality. One example which I'd like to look at today is that of Datan and Aviram. And a quick refresher, Datan and Aviram appear in the story of the rebellion of Korach in Bamidbar, Tetzayin, and Yudzayin. Nay, together with Korach and a few others, rebel against Moshe. This is the only story where Datan and Aviram actually appear, at least by name. The Midrash, however, links them to a number of different stories, specifically to a number of different rebellion stories. And the question, of course, is why? So first I'd like to quickly list which stories we are talking about. The first story is in Shmot Perek Bet, where Moshe, still living as the son of Bat Paro in Egypt, goes out amongst Bnei Israel twice. On the first occasion, he kills the Egyptian who was beating an Israelite. On the second occasion, he sees two Israelites fighting, or two Hebrews, as it's said in the story, fighting. And he says to one of them, right, who is referred to as the Rasha, why are you hitting the other? And the man basically tells him to mind his own business and inquires whether Moshe is going to kill him the way that he killed the Egyptian in the previous story. Right, Moshe realizes now that the fact that he killed the Egyptian is known, and he runs away to Midian. The second time the Midrash links Datan Vaviram to anonymous individuals is in Shmot Perek Hey, where when Moshe returns to Egypt as the newly appointed leader by God of Am Yisrael, the first meeting does not go so well with Paro, and Paro makes it harder for Bnei Israel. Right? Not only do they have to continue making the same number of bricks as before, but now they have to go find their own straw. The straw will not be provided for them. This, of course, makes life much harder for Bnei Israel, and it also makes life harder for the Shotrim. The Shotrim were the members of Am Yisrael who were appointed to kind of be the officers over them. They were kind of like the intermediaries between the Noksim, the taxmasters, who were like beating up on Am Yisrael, the slaves, and the slaves themselves. Right? So these Shotrim were kind of like the people caught in the middle, and they have to kind of do their own beating up in one way or another of Am Yisrael to get them to go and get done what they have to get done. The Shotrim, get beaten up when they don't complete their job, and they go to complain to Moshe. They say, why have you come? Why are you causing trouble? It's better for leave us just to do our work and leave us alone. The next story is in Perek Yud Dalid, when Bnei Israel are standing at the sea. And they're kind of caught between the Egyptians who are approaching and the sea, which has not yet split. And they say, we should go back, we should appoint a leader and go back to Egypt. The Midrash here also says that that the people who were complaining were Datan and Aviram. The next story is in Shmot Tetzayin, when Hashem gives Bnei Israel man for the first time to eat. One of the laws regarding the man was that every day they would collect the man they needed for that day, and they were not allowed to leave it over for the next day. There were some individuals who decided to leave it over, kind of as a way, kind of like a mini rebellion on the authority of Moshe and possibly of God as well. And so the Midrash says that those people were Datan and Aviram. And then in the book of Bamidbar, you have the story of those individuals who, after the sin of the spies, the Chet HaMeraglim, who, after they are told they're not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael, when they hear how difficult it's going from them, from the spies, when they hear how difficult it's going to be to conquer the land, they complain to Moshe, right, that they're about what's going to happen when they go into Eretz Yisrael. They're all going to die, and they say Nitna Rosh v'Nashuv Mitzrayim. Let's appoint a new leader and go back to Egypt. And then finally, of course, there's Bamidbar Perek Tetzayin, where we have the story of Mered Korach, the rebellion of Korach, where Datan and Aviram are mentioned by name. One other or actually two other places where Datan v'Aviram are mentioned. Where the Midrash links Datan v'Aviram. One other place where the Midrash links Datan v'Aviram to unknown, anonymous people is when Moshe, in Perek Dalet of Shemot, is in Midian, and Hashem is trying to tell him to go back to Mitzrayim. He says, Lech shuv Mitzrayim, ki meitu kol ha'anashim ha'mivakshim et nefshecha. All those people who were trying to kill you back in Egypt have died. Right? So the Midrash says this with Datan v'Aviram, and lest you say, but Datan v'Aviram, according to the Midrash, show up in all sorts of later stories. So the Midrash explains there that when it says that they died, it doesn't mean that they actually died, it means that they lost their possessions, they lost their prestige, and therefore it is as if they were dead. Okay? So these are the various stories where the Midrash links Datan and Aviram to anonymous rebels in stories in the Torah. The question, like, as I mentioned earlier, is why? Right? Why does the Midrash choose to say that these anonymous rebels, who the Torah chose to leave anonymous, are actually Datan and Aviram? Right? Is the Midrash telling us a historical truth? These actually were Datan and Aviram? Or is there some other message the Midrash is trying to say? And, of course, it's important to note that the Midrash does not link them to every rebellion story in the Torah. There are rebellion stories which are not linked to Datan and Aviram. So the question is, why are these specific stories mentioned in the Midrash? Midrashim of this sort are basically acting as hints, right, as footnotes, as hyperlinks, by saying that each of these stories, really about Datan v'Aviram, the Midrash is saying, look carefully at these stories, right? Everything you know about Datan v'Aviram from the story of Mered Korach is somehow true in one way or another about these other stories. The Midrash is basically saying, right, I'm giving you this hint, you have to do the work yourself. I'm not going to spell it out for you, right? Now, in some cases of Midrashim such as these, right, it really is up to the reader, to the learner of the Midrash, to figure it all out. The Midrashim are much more concise. As it turns out in this case, the Midrashim are somewhat more self-revealing, right? They tell us what they're doing. And as such, I thought it was a good example of this type of Midrash to learn first, because we kind of get inside the mind, so to speak, of the Midrash, and the Midrash just to see what the Midrash is trying to do here. Now, there isn't one Midrash that lists all of the different stories that lists all of the stories and links them to Datan v'Aviram, right? There are a number of different Midrashim, and these are available on the Web Yeshiva website for those of you who are interested. So we're going to have to look at a number of different Midrashim to see how the Midrash is linking Datan v'Aviram to these various stories. Now, since the podcast is short and the list is long, we're going to not be able to look at all these stories carefully inside. The sources are available on the website. You can look at them, and you can look up all the psukim carefully of the psukim that I'm going to mention from the Torah. But we're not going to be able to look at everything inside, because it would just take us far too long. Now, what the Midrashim that we're looking at are basically doing, they're going to show us that there are different words, different keywords that link the stories together. So, for example, if you look at the Midrash from Shemot Rabbah, on the words Ivrim Nitzim, it says there, Kera'am Nitzim Hashem Sofam. Right, they were called Nitzim in the story in Perek Dalet of the two Ivrim who were fighting, because of what happens to them later on. And then the Midrash goes on to list various other stories where there were anonymous people who were Nitzim, who were fighting. Right, the people who left over the man, the people who wanted to go back to Egypt, etc., when they were on the sea, etc. All these cases, these people were Nitzim. They were fighting. They were arguing. And that's what the word Nitzim means. So what this Midrash is pointing out is that there's a characteristic that appears in many of these different stories. They're all arguing in the same way. A different Midrash, right, found in the Gemara, Nedarim, Daf Samach Dalet Amud Bet, this idea, this linking of the different stories, is spelled out more clearly. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, Kol Makom Shene'emar Nitzim VeNitzavim Einan Ela Datan VeAviram. Right? What the Midrash is pointing out here, what Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, is not only that there's a character trait that shows up in all these stories, but the word is there as well in many of the cases. Not in each and every one, but in many of the cases, the word nitzavim or nitzim appears. So, again, I'm not going to be able to read every pasuk, but if you look at the story in Shmot Perek Bet, in the story in Shmot Perek Dalid, in Bamidbar Perek Tzayin, the story of Korach, where Datan Vavirar mentioned explicitly, the word nitzim or nitzavim appear. Now, those words nitzim and nitzavim are not identical, right? Nitzim means to fight, and nitzavim means to stand, right? But the Midrash is playing with words here and saying that in each of these stories, you have you have these rebels, in some cases, explicitly Datan Vavirar, in some cases anonymous rebels, fighting, standing up and fighting, coming out and fighting, or nitzavim, that they're coming out in some sort of belligerent way, right? And that is what the next midrash on your list says, right? From Shmot Rabbah, nitzavim nikratam, mahu nitzavim, amru rabotenu zichronam livracha, Datan v'Aviram hayu imahen, shekatuv v'hen, v'Datan v'Aviram yatzu nitzavim. Right, this Midrash gives a definition of what does it mean, nitzavim, that they were throwing insults, they were arguing, they weren't just standing there, right? They were standing there in a very belligerent sort of way. And you have this, same idea in the Midrash, which I'm not going to read, but you can take a look at it, from Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, which connects the fact that they were nitzavim to the idea that they were rishaim. And then in the Tanchuma, Gimel, you have it explained again. V'datan v'aviram yatsu nitzavim. This is talking about Datan v'aviram in the Korach story. V'chi yoshvin o korin o noflin yotzin b'nei adan. Right? It says that they came out standing. So the Midrash laughs and says, what, do people usually come out sitting? Do people usually come out falling? What does it mean they were standing? Of course they were standing. Ela melamed shiyatsu kishehen micharfin umigadfin. Right, the same terminology as used in Shmot Rabbah. Right, they were throwing insults. They were fighting. Shene'emar kan yitzi'ah v'hatzava. V'ne'emar b'goyata plishti yitzi'ah v'hatzava. Right, it brings another story from the book of Shmuel, where Goliath, when he comes out to fight against David and against Am Yisrael, he also came out, and the words Yitziah and Hatzavah are used there as well. He comes out also insulting and you know, very belligerent. So too, right, the Midrash is doing a literary comparison. You have the same thing with Datan and Aviram here, right? So they're pointing out that the words Nitzim and Nitzavim, right, they're playing with them, even though the words are not actually etymologically connected, but that they basically mean the same thing in all of these stories where they appear, which are many of the stories on our list, right? That all of these rebels came out in a very particular negative, belligerent stance. It's very important to note that there's one last source which mentions Datan and Aviram, right? And that's in Perek Kaf Vav. Bamidbar. Perek Kafav, where there's a list of, you know, a genealogical list of Am Yisrael, and it says in Pasuk Tet, Uvene Eliav Nimuel v'Datan v'Aviram, it lists the sons of Eliav, including Datan v'Aviram, Hu Datan v'Aviram kriya haida asher hitzu al Moshe v'al Haron v'adat koach v'hatzotam al Hashem. Right, twice they are referred to with the same word, nitzim, right? Hitzu, hatzotam. They were fighting against Moshe and Aaron and also against Hashem. So in the story of Korach, they're called nitzavim. And in this pasuk, in Perek Kaflav and Bamidbar, they're referred to as basically nitzim, right? So that allows the Midrash, in its very Midrashic sort of way, to link back to all those other stories where either the word nitzim or nitzavim is used, in each case meaning that they were acting towards each other or towards the other, towards Moshe, in a very negative, belligerent sort of way, right? And that allows the Midrash to link them all together. Another word that links many of the stories, right? And this was hinted to in the Midrash, which we didn't read together, but you could look at from Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, which says that that these people who were Nitzavim were Rishaim. And if you look at the various stories, the story in Perek Bet and the story in and the story of the Tam Vaviram in Perek Tetzayin, these people are referred to as Rishaim as well. Right, that this quality of being Nitzim, of being Nitzavim, makes them Rishaim. And you have this in the Midrash, in the Tanchuma, which we haven't read yet, Tanchuma on Shmot Yud, Vayomru Ish Elachiv, right, this is on the story, the pasuk from the story in Shmot Bet, right, one said to the other, I'm sorry, Vayomru Ish Elachiv is on the story when the Israel are in Yam Suf, and they're saying to each other, we should go back to Egypt. V'hine Shnei Anashim Ivrim Nitzim, right? So there too it says that there were people fighting. Mihu mihayu datan vaviram. Vehem shamru nitna rosh v'nashuv mitzrayma. Vehem shehemeru al yamsuf. Vehem shehotiru min aman dechtiv. Vehotiru minu anashim ad boker. Vehem yatsu lilkot v'lo matzu. Vehem hayu b'machlokto shal korach. Shene'emar hu datan vaviram. Hein she'amdu berishatan mitchila v'atsof. Right, this midrash also picks up on the rishut, that they were bad. Right, these weren't just some anonymous people; they were bad people. Right, that's what the nitzim and the nitzavim implies. Right, and we see that in at least some of the stories, the word rasha is used explicitly. Another word that links all of these people together is the word people. Right, and you might have noticed this also, and it's also implied in the midrash in the Tanchuma, which I just read. Right, that you have the word. That these anonymous people, right, because they're anonymous, that's what the Midrashim are building on, the fact that we don't know where they are, and therefore they're linking them to the Tam Vaviram. These anonymous people are all referred to as either Ish, if it's in the singular, a man, or Anashim, men, people. And so that you have them being referred to as Anashim, again, in Shmot Perek Bet. You have it again in Shmot Perek Dalet, Ki Meitu Kol HaAnashim HaMivakshim Et Nafshecha. You have it in Shmot Perek. In Shmot Perek Tetzayin, in the story of the man, Velo Shamu El Moshe Vayotiru Anashim Mimenu Ad Boker. In the story of the Miraglim, Vayamru Ish El Achiv Nitna Rosh V'Nashuv Mitzrayma. And then in the story of Korach, where they're mentioned by name, the Tam Vaviram are referred to as Ha'anashim HaRishaim, right? So in each case, they're referred to as Ish, or in almost every case, either as Ish or Anashim, and that again allows the Midrash to link them together and saying, all of these Anashim, HaRishaim, HaNitzim, HaNitzavim, right, these are all the same person. And who are they? Well, from the one story where they're mentioned by name, we can say that they are Datan and Aviram. Okay, so we see that what the Midrash is doing a very careful reading of these stories, right, and doing basically literary analysis, right, choosing words and linking the stories together because of the common words that they have. It's very important to note, though, that it doesn't end there, right, that not only are these words linking it together, saying that we're having in each case rebels who are Rishaim, who are nasty in all sorts of ways, but what they are saying in each case, right, the essence of their rebellion is the same in each case. And this, I think, is what sets these stories apart from various other rebellion stories. And so very quickly, I'd like to point out what the common denominator is between these various stories. Again, we're not going to be able to look at each of them inside, but you can now go back and look and see where in each of these stories these elements are found. And basically, it boils down to two major issues. One issue is the objection to the authority of Moshe, where you have from the very first story mentioned in the Midrash, right, where the the Rasha in the story says, "Mi samcha le'ish sar v'shofet aleinu? Who made you an authority and a judge upon us?" Right? Are you going to kill me the way that you killed the Mitzri? Right? So this Rasha is saying to Moshe, mind your own business. Right? Who died and made you king? Who said that you can tell us what to do? This, of course, is one of the main themes of what Datan Daviram say in the story of Korach itself, in Pasuk Yud Gimel of Perek Tetzayin in Bamidbar. Right? Is it enough that you took us out of the land of milk and honey, meaning Egypt, to have us die in the desert? That you're also going to be an authority above us? You're also going to make yourself leader over us? Right? Right? The words are linked. Right? It's the same issue. Right? They don't like the authority of Moshe over them. Right? And this theme... this theme is critical in many of the stories that are on the list, right? For example, also in Shmot Parakeh, when the Shotrim come to Moshe to complain, saying, you know, why are you making life harder for us? They're basically implying, right, why are you coming and imposing yourself as an authority over us, right? Leave us alone, let us be slaves, right? You're just causing us more trouble. You think you're coming in to help us, to be our leader, but that's really not the case, right? So again, you are imposing yourself on us, and we don't want that. We don't want you to be over us. And in Perek, Hey, Shmot Perek Hey, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, they say, Vayomru Aleihem, Yirei Hashem Aleichem Vayishpot. But Hashem is going to judge you. You want to be Sar V'Shofet Aleinu, right? But judge, Hashem is really going to be the one who has to be a Shofet of you, to judge you, right? So it's the authority of Moshe that they are objecting to. And the other critical theme that comes up in basically every one of these stories on the list is this idea of the idealization of Egypt. It comes up more strongly in some stories and somewhat less strongly in other stories. But what sets all of these stories up as different from the various other rebellion stories is the idea that Egypt was a place that we want to return to. Now, to be clear, there are many other stories where Egypt is mentioned, right? So, for example, in the story of Masau Meriva, right, when Bnei Yisrael complained that they don't have water, the first time that Moshe hits the rock to give them water. So there also, they say, right, why did you take us out of Egypt to die in the desert? But what makes these stories different is that they're not simply saying, why did you take us out of Egypt to die in the desert? Meaning, what is implied by that type of complaint? They're saying, look, we were slaves in Egypt, and, you know, it's true, it's not so good to be a slave, but, you know, what was the point of being taken out of Egypt if we're just going to die in the desert? Right? And there's some logic to that, right? Saying, if they really think that they're about to die, okay, so better that we should be there. There's no implication that Egypt was good. It's basically saying that there was just no point, right? It was pointless to leave Egypt. There's no good reason for us to be here right now. But when in almost every story, in most cases very strongly, in some cases more subtly implied, in all of these stories here where the Tanva Aviram are linked by the Midrash to the stories, is this idea that Egypt was a good place, a place that we want to go back to. Not that we want to go back there simply because the desert is bad, but yes, the desert is bad, and why on earth did you take us away from that wonderful place? So you see this, for example, in the story of the man in Perek Tetzayin in Shmot Pasuk Gimel, Vayomru Aleihem Bnei Yisrael, Mi Yiten Mutenu Biyad Hashem BeEretz Mitzrayim. You know, halavai that we would have died in Mitzrayim. B'shivtenu Al Sir HaBasar BeOchlenu Lechem HaSova. There we had tons of food and we had lots to eat. Right, it's an idealization. It could be that they weren't hungry. That as slaves they were given enough to eat so that they could work. But it's kind of like skewing what happened in Mitzrayim in order to make their point. And you have that again in... You have it again in the story of the Meraglim. Lama Hashem mevi otanu el ha'aretz hazot lipol b'cherv nashenu v'tepenu yu levaz halo tov lana l'shuv Mitzrayim. Right? V'yomru ish l'chiv nitna rosh v'nashuv ha'mitzrayim. Right? So it's true that here they might be saying that we don't want to die here, we'd rather go back to Egypt where it's safe. But as opposed to many of the other stories where that remains like this theoretical, okay, what was the point, why did we leave? Here they're actually saying, let's go back to Egypt. Right? As terrible as the situation was in Egypt, let's go back there. Let's go back there. And then in the story of Korach, Hame'at ki helitanu me'eretz zvat chalav u'dvash la'amitenu b'midbar. Right? It's bad enough that you took us out of Eretz zvat chalav u'dvash. Eretz zvat chalav u'dvash here isn't Eretz Yisrael, it's Eretz Mitzrayim. Right? It was so wonderful there, why did you take us out of there? Right? And now if you go back to the first two stories, the story in Perek Bet and the story of Perek Dalet of Shmot, here that same point is made, but in an ironic sort of way. Right? What does the Rasha in Perek Bet of Shmot yell at Moshe about? Right? Are you going to kill me the way you killed the Egyptian? Well, what was Moshe doing? He was saving another Ivri from the Egyptian. Right? So the Ivri in that story is choosing to overlook the fact that Moshe was saving one of his own kind from a terrible, terrible fate. But we don't want that. We'd rather not have your authority than to somehow improve our, to somehow get out of the situation in Egypt. And of course, with the Shotrim as well. Right? The Shotrim, in some ways, are in some ways the worst situation of all of them. They are also, you know, beaten up by the Egyptians in Egypt, but they're also hated by Bnei Israel, whom they have authority over, right? But they're not interested. They say to Moshe, We don't want you to shake anything up. Let us just stay here where we are. We want to stay here in Egypt. We do not want anything to happen to shake up the status quo, because you're not helping us as you think you are, right? So what we see in all these stories is some sort of extreme cases of these people who don't want to accept the authority of Moshe. They'd rather stay entrenched in whatever it was that was in Mitzrayim, to the extent that they remember, either that they remember it as Eretz Zvat Chalav Udvas, a wonderful place that you tore us away from, or they have somehow become so part of that system that they don't want it. They don't want Moshe to interrupt it, right? It's very interesting that that these, according to the Midrash, these people in Parakei were the Shotrim. They were the ones who had a sort of pseudo authority over their own people. So Moshe, in a way, is kind of taking over their position. They're going to lose any authority that they ever had if Moshe indeed comes to try to help them. So what is the Midrash trying to do? So one possibility, right, as it says in the Midrash in Seder Eliyahu Rabbah, Kol she'ata yochol litlot rasha tolu alav, right? If you see similar types of stories, stories that are very similar to the story that is explicitly about Datan v'Aviram, so then say that they're all Datan v'Aviram, right? And this possibly minimizes the sinning of Am Yisrael at large. Right? If we can constantly say it's always the same bad seeds that are rebellion, that are rebelling, that means that it wasn't always all of Am Yisrael. So that's one possible purpose of these midrashim. That maybe what these midrashim are trying to do by saying that they're all the same. They were all the same bad people. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that it's the midrash is simply forcing us to be careful readers. Right? It's saying to us, look at the stories carefully. Don't lump them all together. Not all rebellions are the same. Not all complaints are the same. Not all of these rebellion stories that seem to come up so often in the Torah are exactly the same thing over and over again. And it's important to read the stories carefully and to understand them, to understand that there are different phenomena going on. And one needs to understand where each of the rebellions come from, where each type of rebellion comes from, and not to treat them all as if they're exactly the same thing. Right, so the Midrash might be saying that these rebels were actually all Datan v'Aviram, Right? It's possible in this case. I could buy in to the theory in this particular case that perhaps they were really the Tanan Aviram in each of these cases. Or if they're simply saying, it doesn't matter if they were actually the Tanan Aviram, but they are like the Tanan Aviram. They are the Tanan Aviram-esque stories. And it's important for us to understand that in order to understand the different trends amongst Bnei Israel, the different tendencies among Bnei Israel, and basically to understand the development of Am Yisrael throughout all of these stories, throughout the Torah, better. In other words, that it's important to understand the distinctions between the different things that the Torah is telling us, and not to blur these distinctions, because that will just make for basically very boring reading. So this is just one type of example of this sort of midrash. I'm sure that in our future podcasts together, we will look at other midrashim that do similar types of things, perhaps though for different purposes or for us to glean different messages. Until then, enjoy your midrash learning, and I encourage you to go back to the sources that we went through very quickly and look at them more carefully.